You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hello, and welcome to the Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast. My name is Jason, and with me as usual is Rich. Hello, Rich.
Hey, what's going on?
Not a whole lot. You know, we're just, enjoying some very interesting NBA playoffs. It's been a weird season. I think we're going to be talking about some of the odd things that have happened this season, including a scoring explosion fairly soon. But I think, first of all, we are going to take some time to talk about a recent loss that we've had in the NBA community. Of course, talking about the great Willis Reed, the great Knicks captain, one of the best big men of his generation, who passed away a few weeks ago, March 21st, 2023. And I wanted to take some time, look at some of the best and most important games in his career.
Yeah. We originally wanted to do an episode like a couple of days after he had passed away, but you were gone on a vacation. Then I was gone on a vacation, and then the timing just didn't quite work out. But we didn't want to skip this over, because we've always, you know, tried to do when guys of this magnitude pass away, we always try to do an episode like this. And, you know, we had discussed, hey, you know, is it too late to go back to the Willis Reed? And it's not, because Willis Reed is just an incredible player. An all-time great, and he absolutely deserves this type of episode, even if it is, you know, a month or so after he actually passed away. But I don't think that is as important as, you know, giving him the spotlight that we're going to do here.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So just some of the basics. You know, he was the MVP 1970, seven-time All-Star, five times All-NBA, including one time on the first team, twice was a Finals MVP. We'll get, of course, more into his Finals theatrics. Averaged 18.7 points per game and 12.9 rebounds per game in his career. He was inducted into the Naismith Hall of Fame in 1982, was named one of the top 50 greatest in 1997, joined the Knicks in the 1965 season, having been a star at Grambling. He was actually the 10th overall pick, which means he was first in the second round.
Funny because, you know, I've always heard it's like, you know, he's a second round pick or whatever. And I'm like, oh, that's pretty impressive. And it's like, oh, right. Yeah, it's 10th overall. Yeah. Like, that's not, right. You know, it's not a second. I mean, they're not all made the same, but it's like, oh, man, what a steal. I mean, it's true that every team passed up on him. But yeah, it is kind of funny that, in 1965, the 10th overall pick is in the second round. But, you know, that was a league then. So
that was nine teams. Yes. Soon to get much larger, of course. But yeah, it was definitely motivated, you know, to outplay the number one overall pick, Jim Bad News Barnes. And he won Rookie of the Year that season.
He didn't come into the league as Bad News Barnes, right? No. Jim Barnes then, right?
Yeah. Jim Barnes. No. So he actually was the original Bad News Barnes. I know Bob Ryan likes to talk about how Marvin Barnes was not actually the real Bad News Barnes. Right. Jim Barnes was the real Bad News Barnes. So I did not look into it to see exactly when he got the Bad News Barnes name. We'll have to take that one up as a takeaway item. See if we can determine when he got that name. Because, well, I would assume, you know, that would be kind of a playoff of Bad News Bears, but Bad News Bears was later. So there must have been some sort of bad news that was happening that, you know, I don't know. Good question.
Yeah, no idea. But I did find out that he has a barbecue sauce, or had a barbecue sauce called Bad News Barbecue Sauce, which was sold in the Washington, D.C. area. So maybe we'll try to get that. It says, I wanted to market something so people who were allergic to tomatoes could enjoy smoke grilled food. So there you go. Mm-hmm. Trying to make something for people allergic to tomatoes. So good for that.
Underrepresented community right there.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Yeah. The listless Knicks, they started to show improvement in Reed's third season. They had their first playoff appearance since 1959 with the core of Willis Reed, of course, his fellow big man, Walt Bellamy, who had come over from the Packers / Baltimore Bullets franchise. They had also veteran guard Dick Barnett, Dick Van Arsdale, and Cassie Russell. Things would change a little bit, but they would kind of progress slowly. They'd get their first winning record in a decade in the next season as Red Holzman would take over as coach. Rookies Walt Frazier, Bill Bradley, and Phil Jackson would join the squad.
That's a good trio of rookies to join your team. That's, Walt Frazier, Bill Bradley, and Phil Jackson. That'll turn things around. You add those three to your team, that might help them get a little bit better on the court, if I don't say so myself.
It did, in fact, yes. Things really came together the next season, 1969. Dave DeBuscher, he was acquired from the Pistons for Walt Bellamy and Howard Komives. The young Knicks won 54 games, took the Celtics, the champion Celtics at the end of their dynasty, to 6 games in the East Finals. At this point, Reed was already a Knicks legend. He had 3 All-NBA appearances, 5 All-Star appearances, but in 1970, he became a New York City immortal. He won the MVP, won the All-Star MVP, led the Knicks to their first championship in a 7-game classic against the Los Angeles Lakers. But, you know, and we're going to talk more about it later, but that inspiring moment.
That is one of the 10 games we're going to talk about, believe it or not. When you clicked this episode, you said, man, I hope that they touch on Willis Reed in the 1970 NBA Finals. Yeah. Do not worry, we will. So there you go.
We might mention it.
We might. It's toward the bottom of our list of games, sure. But yeah, sure. We'll match. Or wait, no, sorry, it's at the top. Sorry. I regret to inform you, Jason, it's actually at the top, but we'll get to that.
Thank you. Thank you for informing me that. Dramatically limping onto the Madison Square Garden court, huge ovation from the crowd, despite a torn thigh muscle, hits the first 2 shots in game 7, an inspirational, you know, inspires his team and the crowd. One of the most dramatic moments in NBA history. You know, how much he actually contributed to that win, debatable, but absolutely an incredible moment.
Yeah, theatrics count here. And that is, that's got all the theatrics. It's got Madison Square Garden. It's got New York City. It's got him hitting those first 2 shots. We'll talk about the game itself, but it's a moment. And I think I put in my notes that's at equal points underrated and overrated. Like it's exactly in that weird sense where like some people way, way, way overrate it and some people way, way underrate it. And I think it's probably right in the middle where it's just a really, really cool moment that everybody needs to kind of understand how big of a deal it was at the time. I think we'll do a good job of trying to tell you, you know, why maybe contribution wise, it's not a big deal, but why, you know, psyche wise, mental wise, you know, pumping up the team wise, leadership wise, it all kind of worked out for the Knicks. And they won the freaking title, so that helped too.
You can't argue with that. And you know, as professional wrestling fans, you know, understanding the, you know, the drama that
came in a surprise
moment, you know, and how, like, you know, that can be more memorable than, you know, even the result of a game. Now, obviously, he comes out, he does that, the Knicks lose. Not quite as
right. We're not talking about it today. Maybe not as much.
But it is certainly that standalone, just the drama and the passion and the way it made people feel, regardless of the result, the way that it made people feel, still it hits home for sure.
Absolutely. So Reed is going to have one more All-Star season in 1971. The Knicks are going to be bounced by the Baltimore Bullets in the playoffs that year, and unfortunately, now is when things start to kind of go south on Willis's career. His injuries limit him to only 11 games in the 1972 season. And then in a lesser role in the 1973 Knicks, he does help the team avenge the prior year's loss to the Lakers. He's again limited by injuries in 1974 and then announces retirement that September. So he gets the title in 1973 as a lesser role, not as the top guy on the team, but still an important part of the team. Obviously gets it in 1970 as the man, as the top guy on the team. But again, it's very short thereafter. 74, he's again limited, and he announces his retirement then. Not long after the Knicks retire his number 19 jersey, the first to ever be retired by the franchise as well, October 21st, 1976. And then he takes over for Red Holzman as Knicks coach in the 1978 season. It's a little bit of a controversy. People aren't quite sure if it's going to work out, and it does not really work out. He leaves the role after just over a season. They did the Nets, though. The New Jersey Nets were like, you know what? Why don't we try it again? And they do it in 1988 and 89. They have him be their head coach. Then he becomes an executive, goes up to the front office, and probably doesn't get a whole lot of love for this round of his GMing. We'll talk about his executive career a little bit later. But as the Nets, you know, executive, he drafts Kenny Anderson and Derek Coleman. He trades for Drazen Petrovic, who obviously, you know, was on the Portland Trailblazers, and everybody kind of thought the guy was good, and everybody internationally was like, hey, this guy's really good, but the Trailblazers were the Trailblazers at the time. They didn't really need a guy like a Drazen Petrovic, so the Nets, you know, smartly pounce on it. grabbed Drazen, and obviously, you know, who knows what could have been, but the early returns were that Drazen, you know, was going to be really solid and maybe break out as a star in the NBA. But of course, you know, tragedy strikes and we never really quite see that with him. And then he also hires Chuck Daly as the coach, you know, post Pistons run for Chuck Daly. So he bounced around a little bit. He ends his executive career with the New Orleans Hornets. There's a Hornets team in New Orleans, apparently. Jason, I didn't know that, but he does that. New Orleans Hornets, the Hornets of New Orleans. Okay, well, Hornets. All right. Sure.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. I believe it. I don't remember, but I believe it.
I have no reason to not believe it, but I also don't really believe it. If that makes sense, you know.
All right. Fair enough. Yeah.
But there you go. So that's a quick little bio on Willis Reed. But let's get into top 10 games of his career. Ready to do that? All right. So we are going to do it. 1970 NBA Finals Game 7. Can you believe it? Yeah. We're going to do it. May 8th, 1970. Like I said, it's a game in a moment that is equal parts overrated and underrated. To kind of set the stage there, Willis Reed thought to be out of the game due to a muscle tear in his right thigh, which sounds very painful, and I probably am not playing an NBA basketball game with a muscle tear in my right thigh. That sounds like I'm not doing anything if I got a muscle tear in my right thigh. But he emerges from the tunnel to a huge ovation, limping like crazy. He does win the opening tip, scores the Knicks' first two baskets, his only two baskets of the game for the record, but it doesn't matter because the Knicks win their first NBA championship, 113-98 over the Los Angeles Lakers. Now, this moment is probably overrated in some ways because he scores only 4 points. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, yeah, he came out, he limped, he came out, and he scored 4 points. All right. And Walt Frazier, who has spent a lifetime of, you know, his career trying to be like, I had 36 points and 19 assists that game. You know, like, yeah, Willis slipped out of the tunnel, but, you know, I had 36 and 19. Can I get a little love here? And he's right. And Walt Frazier is absolutely 100% right about that. But this moment is also kind of underrated because Reed's presence was so significant. Reed was the 1970 All-Star Game MVP. He was the regular season MVP. He was the heart and the soul of the Knicks. That's not taking anything away from Walt Frazier, not taking anything away from any of those other guys, but Willis Reed was the heart and soul of that team. So he tears his thigh muscle in Game 5. He sits out Game 6, and Wilt Chamberlain took full advantage of this. He scored 45 points and grabbed 27 rebounds to tie the series at 3 apiece in that Game 6. So obviously without Willis Reed, that was a pretty big thing. And Willis Reed always, you know, this is a quote that I was able to find for him. He says, "I didn't want to have to look at myself in the mirror 20 years later and say, I wish I had tried to play." So he does play, and yeah, he's got an injury and he's not scoring a whole lot, but he bothers Wilt Chamberlain enough. I mean, Chamberlain has a good game, but not a great one. 21 points, 24 rebounds, 10 of 16 from the field. I mean, that's a very, very, very good game. But, you know, for Wilt Chamberlain, when he has 45 and 27 in Game 6, you know, 21 and 24, you'll live with that. You'll live with that for sure. One of the other major problems there is Chamberlain's free throw woes came at the absolute worst time possible. He was 1 of 11 from the free throw line in this game. And just to throw this in here, tortured soul Jerry West, he had 28 points and, you know, lost in Game 7 of the NBA Finals for the, believe the only time that ever, oh, wait, no, never mind. That happened a lot. I'm now finding out that, no, in fact, Jerry West lost in a lot of Game 7s and a lot of NBA Finals. But, after the game, and this is a famous line as well that probably helps, you know, take on, like we said, there's a lot of pomp and circumstance and the moment and all this sort of stuff. Howard Cosell's famous line interviewing Willis Reed and says, "Willis, you exemplify the very best that the human spirit can offer." I mean, that's great. That's good stuff right there. So,
nice phrase to coin.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. So you exemplify the very best that the human spirit could offer. Reed would end up winning the finals MVP as well, becoming the first player to ever be All-Star Game MVP, regular season MVP, and finals MVP in the very same season that year as well. He was all NBA first team and all NBA defensive first team as well. So that's just like, I mean, that's one of the better years in NBA. I mean, talk about just cleaning up on everything. You win the title, All-Star Game MVP, regular season MVP, finals MVP, all NBA first team, all defensive first team. Like, there's what else? You know, what else are you going to get? That's everything right there, man. So that's just 1970 puts a stamp on just an all-time great season there and just a monumental game and an infamous game for Willis Reed. 1970 NBA Finals Game 7.
All right, yeah. Next, we will go to the beginning. We will talk about Willis Reed's NBA debut, October 17th, 1964. Reed begins his NBA career with 15 points and 22 rebounds in a 4-point loss to the Lakers. Now, that may not seem like a big deal in and of itself, but you got to remember the Knicks, they're the dregs of the league. They've been the dregs of the league for a long time. You know, the prior season they were 22-58. You know, they don't dramatically improve right away, but they do improve by 9 games with Reed being there. Clearly have a star on their hands. And really, you know, this is the beginning of taking the Knicks from, you know, being a perennial last place team. I mean, looking at the same years that the Celtics were great, you know, the Knicks are in fourth place almost every single season, you know, from 57-66. They made the playoffs one time during that stretch. They're just in, you know, they're under 30 games won for 5-6 straight seasons. So they're bad. And, you know, they finally have a player who brings back respectable, good, and eventually great basketball into New York and really, you know, sets the foundation, you know, along obviously with the other guys who came in, you know, obviously Frazier and Bradley, et cetera, turns. It's important for the NBA because the NBA being cool and being hip and being big in New York pays huge dividends for the league. Some of that, you know, right away, some of that, you know, further down the line. But, you know, I think the Knicks were the first that had any kind of cachet in pop culture, you know, significant cachet in pop culture because of, you know, just the fact of being in New York and because of the team that they were. And obviously Reed was the center of that team. So, I mean, this is a small light that a spark that eventually, you know, turns into, you know, one of the great teams in NBA history.
Yeah, yeah. And a good thing to, or something to note here about Willis Reed is, you know, he makes his debut here, you know, starts out with 15-22, and it's like, oh, okay, good little, you know, not bad for a second round pick. Now, we said, of course, right, second round pick is, you know, top 10 pick still, but sure, still, you know, they passed on him once and 9 other teams passed on him. So, that, you know, it's okay. And he pretty much wouldn't look back. He would score double figures over his first 17 games, and he finished the season with 51 double doubles as well. So it was like pretty much from day one, they're like, "Yeah, this Reed guy's pretty good," and then he was just pretty good. You know what I mean? Like he never until the injuries, obviously, you know, sucked, you know, most of his athleticism and his ability to play out, you know, over those last couple of years. He pretty much showed up day one. He was good, and then he was good for, you know, a decade plus after that. So it's not bad. Not a bad draft pick then.
Not too bad. No, definitely.
We'll go to March 5th, 1965. It's his first 40-point game. And, you know, obviously we just talked about how previously, you know, or how quickly, I should say, Reed acclimated himself to the NBA and immediately became the Knicks' top star. He'd make it even more glaring and official in March when in his 70th game as a pro, he's only 70 games as a pro, he scores 46 points against the soon-to-be NBA Finals-bound Los Angeles Lakers. We talked about his debut against the Lakers. Now we talk here. I mean, he's delivering against the Lakers, which are, you know, one of the better teams in the league at this point. And now, you know, Reed's Knicks are, again, going to lose by two, but that's okay. It's not from a lack of effort from Reed, and that's still better than what they were doing years prior where, like you said, they were just not very good at all. He scores 46 points, grabs 22 rebounds. He shoots 17 of 33 from the field and 12 of 13 from the free throw line. And Reed's performance does put him in a pretty rare class of rookies to score over 45 points a game. I don't know if I need to list every single one, but it's not a very big list considering the amount of rookies that have been in the NBA all time. Scoring 45 points in a game as a rookie is pretty it's pretty rare to do that. So he's got it, you know, and a bunch of other names. You could maybe we'll link it in there, but I don't have to go through every single one. But Kelly Trepuka is on there, and Charlie Villanueva is on there too. So if you're thinking, oh man, nah, but those are kind of the outliers. Otherwise, it's like the rest of the list is I'd say about 75% like real deal dudes. You know what I mean? There's a few guys thrown in there that aren't, but for the most part, the list is all really, really good players.
You got your Joe Barry Carrolls, you got your Brandon Jennings, of course, but you also got your George Mikan's and your Oscar Baylor. So right, exactly. So, all right, November 1st, 1967, Reed's only 50-point game is also a revenge game. He keeps coming against Lakers, man. Does something about these games.
He's sick of these assholes. He's like, I'm done with these guys. We're not losing to these idiots anymore. We're done.
Yeah, we're done.
Yes. We are going to lose. I mean, we're going to lose a couple times, but I'm going to make it so we not lose to them. And well.
Yeah, here we go. So this is a win for the Knicks. 129-113. Reed scores 53 points on 21 of 29 shooting. Also grabs 18 rebounds. And so this had come after Reed and the Lakers had what is a, you know, fairly infamous fight during the Knicks home opener. There's video footage of this, and it's pretty incredible. So it's their home opener of the season. Basically, Willis Reed just basically ends up fighting the entire Lakers bench. First, you're matching up against Rudy La Russa throughout the game. He does a whole lot of elbows thrown his way. During the third quarter, when there's some free throw shots going off, La Russa and Reed, they fight for position. Reed's mad because La Russa hits him with one elbow too many. So Reed tangles up with him. La Russa throws a big punch. This is happening right in front of the Lakers bench. So quickly, a bunch of Lakers race onto the court. Reed turns around in response to La Russa's missed punch. And then Daryl Imhoff from the Lakers tries to grab Reed from behind. Then La Russa punches Reed during this time. Oh, he gets mad. Dropping him to the ground. He then chases La Russa to the bench. Gets two shots against him. John Block from the Lakers comes up. Also trying to be like, hey, let's just stop this. Reed ends up blocking and breaking Block's nose. And then Imhoff comes up again and then punches him in the eye. Imhoff is bleeding, goes to a bunch of Lakers. By this time, the Knicks have arrived.
Yeah,
thank you.
Hey guys, welcome. Yeah, welcome to the fight, guys, and take your time. Yeah. No problem. Yeah.
And Bry from the Knicks jumping all over the Lakers. Reed gets La Russa one more time for
convention. Yeah, good. Yeah, you know what? Screw him. Yeah. Give him one more.
Right. And then he throws any other Laker who came to the ground, including Hank Finkel. So, yeah, Reed and La Russa are ejected. So, each fine $50.
Oh, you know what, boys? We're going to make this hurt. Here's $50. What's I got to see. What 1967. I got to see what $50 is in 1967 money. Because that doesn't seem like a lot.
$1,000, yeah. Probably like $300 maybe.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm thinking. Yeah, how much is $50?
So, yeah, I'm not great with inflation calculator, but yeah.
$451.85. Oh, so yeah, that's not much.
Yeah. So yes, so at this point, Dolph Schayes, he was the head of the NBA referees. I guess he was part of the discipline. He debated suspending Reed, but thankfully the Knicks had footage of the encounter, and since it was clear that La Russa had started, Reed was cleared. No fight. Reed would later tell his teammates that they should never try to restrain him in a fight. And that, you know, basically at one point he was restrained during a fight when he was in college with somebody, and the crowd took a chance to throw a bottle of him, said that if they ever tried to restrain him, they could expect a little of what he gave to the Lakers. So.
Yeah, well, and in this fight, like, Imhoff, you know, tried to, like, you know, wrap his arms around, and then Rudy La Russa threw a punch at him during that time. So it was like, all right, so yeah, he's going back to college where somebody throws a bottle at him after he gets restrained. In this fight, he gets restrained and he gets a punch thrown. So he's like, yeah, one of you guys touches me, I'm decking your asses too. You're all going down. So it's like, you know, yeah, I like it.
Yeah. Could you imagine that happening today?
Oh, God. Yeah. Reed is gone. Yeah. He is out of the league.
Yeah. Probably like 50 games or something, you know. But yes. Well, people should YouTube that. I'm sure it's available. That's pretty nuts.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like, you know, Mouse and Palace level nuts, you know. I mean, that's one of the most intense fights I've ever seen.
Yeah, full-on brawl between two teams and one guy just like throwing guys left and right. It's something for sure. And he did there was in 1977 they did an interview with Reed for Sports Illustrated, and then he says, they said I should be banned. All I got was an ejection and a small fine, nothing like what they give out now. Geez, he thinks in 1977 it's nothing like they give out now, man.
Yeah, right.
You would know what would happen if someone did that all today. He said, would a full $10,000 be a good guess, is what the Sports Illustrated reporter asked. I don't know if that fight, again, like you said, if that happens in 2023, I mean, it's not $10,000, it's millions upon millions, and like you said, he's gone for 50 games, 60 games a year. Who knows? And it's funny that, you know, when you think of the Knicks and brawls, you know, it's the 1990s Knicks that come to mind. But hey, let's give a little credit to, you know, Willis Reed going out and taking down the whole Lakers by himself.
Right. Yeah.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify?
Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right. Next, what do we got next?
Yep. Next, we got December 20th, 1968, beginning of what I'm calling the Dynasty. So it's not a particularly special game for Reed individually. He only has 12 points and 8 rebounds in 23 minutes. But with new Nick, Dave DeBuscher debuting, and they beat the Pistons pretty well. they beat them by 48, which is a not a bad way to win. A 500 team suddenly became a juggernaut. They would finish the season 54-28, their best season since their last finals appearance all the way back in 1953. And like we talked about earlier, the Knicks now had their core. It was Reed. It was DeBuscher. It was veteran guard Dick Barnett. It was Walt Frazier. It was Rhodes scholar Bill Bradley. They also had contributions all up and down the bench. Cassie Russell, Phil Jackson, Earl Monroe, and Jerry Lucas. They were ready to go. And DeBuscher was also the missing piece because he allowed Reed to shift full time to center. And again, Reed's numbers didn't change all that much, but you know, the Knicks, it just kind of worked better for the whole lineup. DeBuscher was there to be another big man. Reed could go to center, and yeah, you see what happens. You know, the Knicks become the new team of the early 70s for the NBA, and they were a great defensive team as well. And they would have two championships and three finals appearances over the next 5 years. And yes, stiff competition from the Bucks, the Bullets, and the Celtics, as well as meeting up with historically great Lakers teams in the finals as well. But yeah, this is kind of when it all gets unlocked. And again, like that individually, not a huge game for Reed, but just kind of is like, okay, now we're off to the races here. And now we're going to start, you know, really, you know, Reed's going to become the stuff of legends here by winning two titles and making three finals over the next 5 years.
Right. Yeah. And I think the key thing is it allowed them to improve their defense because especially Bellamy was not strong on that end. And they were able to have better interior defense. And also they just, their sense of connectedness, being able to play together, the ball, you know, balancing between the players rather than being dominated. That was a better fit for them as well. I mean, yeah. And it wasn't like they necessarily won that trade in talent, but they won it on chemistry, for sure. So
definitely.
All right. Next, we have November 28th, 1969. The Knicks win their 18th game in a row, breaking the NBA record at the time. Reed had 19 points and 13 rebounds. This is against the Royals. They would improve to 23-1 in that season and what would end up being their 60-win championship season. They broke the BAA NBA record of 17 games in a row set by the 47 Washington Capitals and matched by the 1960 Boston Celtics, who were both coached by Red Auerbach. The Knicks record would only last for one season. The 1971 Bucks would win 20 in a row. And finally, a coach not named Red would have that winning streak. And then a season later, the Lakers would demolish it by winning 33 in a row. And overall now, there have been 14 teams who have won 18 or more games in a row. And this is only counting single season streaks because season win streaks are a stupid thing.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah, they're dumb. I hate them. Right. I think they're really stupid. And
they are incredibly stupid.
Yes. Thank you. I'm very glad.
All right.
Yeah, 18 in a row at that, at, you know, 1969 is great. But yeah, it is pretty wild that there has been as many of those as there have. And the fact that, like, immediately there was already a bunch of them. I wonder why that was. I wonder if it was just, you know, the parity in the league, you know, kind of changing or expansion or whatever. But yeah, it's pretty wild that just immediately a bunch of these teams start railing off, you know, really, really long win streaks.
Yeah, I mean, I would think expansion probably is the primary reason. I mean, there's easier teams to beat now. Certainly there was a... You know, there was also the situation of teams, you know, breaking wins records and, you know, the best teams winning 60 plus games, which had been very rare up until then. But, you know, for a few years that was happened much more commonly. So, yeah, that'd be my best guess. You know, and then and, you know, also there were some just really strong individual players. I mean, Kareem obviously was, you know, was there who just were kind of a casting shadow of the game. Actually, talk a little bit more about that. In a couple of segments, but the next one we're going to talk about February 2nd, 1971, career high 33 rebounds at 6'10", reads one of the best big men of generation, but he was never like truly, I mean, he was a very good rebounder, but he was never like the best rebounder. He was top 10 in rebounds per game seven times, never better than fifth, although he did finish his career 12th all time in rebounds per game at 12.9. So, but it was never like quite, you know, that prolific single game rebounder, you know, guys getting like 25, 30 rebounds in a game. He didn't have that as often as some. There were 154 games during his career where there was 30 plus rebounds in a game, and he only did it twice. Wes Unseld did it four times during that time. Nate Thurman did it 16. Bill Russell did it 25. Dre Lucas did it 16 times, and Wilt did it 68 times. There's always a Wilt stat.
There's always a Wilt stat. Yeah, you're like, oh, 25 times over the course of the – that's not – oh, Wilt did it 68 times. Okay, all right. So he did it more than all those guys combined because, of course, he did because it's Wilt.
Yes. Yes, and several other guys did it a bunch. But Reed, it was twice, and then his career high on this date with 33 – achieving it against the Cincinnati Royals. Keeps beating up on the Royals, too. It's the Royals and the Lakers. They just keep beating up on 115-108 was this game. Also 27 points in that game.
Not a bad game.
So, yeah, not bad at all. Yes, in his career high of 30 had been achieved November, or his prior career high in 30 rebounds had been achieved November 12, 1970 in a tight 110-108 loss to the Bullets. He also had 34 points to go with the 30 board. So he liked the you know, close to 30-30.
Yeah, he really did. Yeah, there's a lot of those games where you go and they're all pretty impressive games there. And well, hey, speaking of April 2nd, 1970, he is in the playoffs here. And Jason, he's going to score 36 points and 36 rebounds. Nice even, little yin and yang there. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
Dominant game for the MVP puts the Knicks back on track versus the Bullets after having lost games 3 and 4, which, yeah, man. Imagine NBA history changing there. The Bullets just, you know, beat the Knicks there. But the list of guys that have had 36 and 36 in the playoffs, it's just Willis Reed and Wilt Chamberlain. Of course it's Wilt Chamberlain. Come on. Of course it's Wilt Chamberlain. You're thinking, of course it's Wilt Chamberlain. He had 42 and 37 on March 27, 1962 in a win versus Boston. If you go to 30-30, then your list does open up a little bit. You got Reed, Kareem, Russell did it four times. Moses Malone did it in the ABA. And Wilt, he did it 12 times. So 30-30 because, of course, Wilt Chamberlain did it way more times than everybody else. And the Bullets and the Knicks, they had a nice little rivalry here. They met 6 years in a row in the playoffs with the Knicks winning all but one of those. Man, what a gut punch there. 1960, the Knicks sweep the number one seeded Bullets. 1970, obviously the Knicks win in seven en route to, you know, winning the NBA title. 1971's the Bullets upset them in seven games to get back on track for them. 1972, the Knicks win in six. 1973, of course, the Knicks are going to win in five and get another NBA title. And then in 1974, the Knicks are going to win in seven again. But what's weird about this, I think just unbelievably bizarre, is that these franchises have not met in the playoffs since. And it's been nearly 50 years. We're talking 1974 to 2023. And the Knicks and the Wizards just can't be good at the same time or align in the seeding the right time. It's That's just, really it weird. Doesn't quite work out. Yeah. It's mostly been not good at the same time for most of it. But
yeah, and neither... Yeah, that is really, really bizarre. I didn't have a chance to look, but I'm curious if we could find any instance of two teams who have had a longer, who've met in the playoffs, but have had a longer absence of that. I mean, if the team in different conferences, obviously, but
right, yeah, you could maybe buy it if it's like, oh, well, the Wizards were, you know, in the West for, you know, 8 years or 10 years. Now they've been in the East, and it's just, yeah, they've never really been good at the same time. When the Knicks were good in the '90s, the Bullets were, you know, they were okay. I guess there was a few times where they could have gotten close, but yeah, I think one of the big issues is that, like, neither of them have been really good, because you have a much bigger chance of you know, meeting in the conference finals or the conference semis or whatever. But yeah, most of the Wizards over the last, you know, 20 or so years, yeah, they don't, you know, don't really make long playoff runs. And the Knicks, well, they don't either. So that probably, you got to get real lucky. And it's like, not like, you know, one of those teams is really vying for the number one seed a whole lot of times either. So they're kind of always in the muck. And yeah, one of them just always finds a way to lose early in the playoffs. So yeah, unbelievable. Has not happened in nearly 50 years. And Jason, looking at the Wizards right now, I don't think it's going to happen for a little while. Knicks are fun. Knicks are in the playoffs. Knicks are having some fun. Wizards, they're the Wizards. Bradley Beal's good.
Yeah, still good. Yes, all right. So now, April 13th, 1970, not long after our last game of 36 and 36, in fact, 11 days later, it's like, oh, yeah, you're moving on for the Bullets. Well, the Knicks, now you got to take on the Bucks. Now you got to take on rookie Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Yes, a rookie, but part of this new generation of big men coming into the NBA. Bill Russell's retired. Well, Chamberlain's no longer quite as dominant of a force. Guys like Dave Thurman, Walt Bellamy, Jerry Lucas are all nearing 30. Now you've got these young Lions. You got Elvin Hayes. You've got Wes Unseld. And you're going to be having soon guys like Dave Cowens, Bob Lanier, about to bring a new level of athleticism and skill to the game. But, of course, none of them are greater force than Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Basically, single-handedly turns the Bucks into a title contender. You know, they go from being near the bottom of the league to 54 wins, you know, battling against the Knicks in the playoffs in their division at this point. The Bucks, of course, are in the East. They would be in the West in the 70s and then go back to the East in the 80s. So this was their only playoff series. It's been interesting to see what would happen, of course, if the Bucks had ended up staying in the East, and then these two teams had chances to battle, you know, every season or so in the Eastern playoffs. That would have been interesting.
Yeah,
historical difference. We would have seen what would happen there. But at this point, you know, Reed's kind of like right in the middle of that generation gap. He's 27, so he's a little bit closer to the old guard than the new. But he's right in the middle there. But does his best to fend off the future greatest of all time contender. This is the Eastern Division Finals. The Knicks won 60 games. The Bucks won 56. So they're very close. Game one in went in favor of the Knicks, but take a valiant effort from New York to keep control of the series. And while Kareem couldn't be stopped, 38 points, 23 rebounds, and 11 assists. Reed nearly as equal, 36 points, 19 rebounds. The Knicks win by 112 to 111, end up taking this series in five games. And overall, yeah, Reed's averages are 27.8 points per game, 12.2 rebounds per game, 3 assists per game. They're not as gaudy as Kareem's, who were just unbelievable, 34.2, 17.8, and 4.8 assists per game. But the Knicks' advantage as a team overall meant that Reed only really had to be respectable, better than respectable, just very good. And he was much more than that in order.
Right.
And you know, so he was able to, you know, he wasn't out-dueling him in terms of the numbers, but he was making it hard for him. He was putting up his share. He was doing what the team needed him to do. And, of course, he could rely on a better, cast of characters around him than Kareem could at that point.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that when you look at Reed's like overall numbers and his career numbers, you might be like, yeah, those aren't that. But then you got to look at the Knicks teams that he was on, and those teams go like 9 deep with like really, really good players, like maybe even 10 deep with you know, supremely skilled players.
Sure.
And some all-time greats on there. So yeah, Reed's obviously, like you said, 27.8 points per game, 12.2 rebounds per game is fantastic. And you might look at Reed's overall, you know, the sub 20, you know, points per game in his career, but then you look at, like, you know, the guys that he was with during, you know, the prime years of his career, and it's like, yeah, those are very, very good. I mean, those Knicks teams, you know, have gotten the reputation for a reason, and a big part of it is just because they were just so well oiled and just top to bottom good. I mean, just so deep with good skilled players coming off the bench, and all five guys in the starting lineup too could all contribute in some ways. So yeah, it's gonna, you know, take your numbers down a little bit, but the success speaks for itself.
Yeah, absolutely. And And, you know, all good things come to an end. 1973, mm-hmm. near the end of his career, finals MVP.
Yep. Yeah, he has 20 and 10 in games 3, 4, and 5. And as we mentioned, you know, a little bit earlier, he's hobbled by injuries at this point. He's no longer the force that he had been previously. You know, obviously the medical in the NBA in those days, and players, like, you know, one major injury or a pretty big injury, and those guys, you know, especially one with to your leg, was like pretty much a death knell for your career. You just, you know, eventually just played on it. You just kind of gutted through it if you could. But a lot of guys, just their athleticism got sapped, their ability to just get onto the floor got sapped, and their just ability to be, you know, what they were got sapped. And Reed, unfortunately, is no exception to that. As we'd say, you know, he'd missed most of the 1972 season, didn't play in the playoffs. And now in 1973, he does come back here. And the aging Knicks, you know, they're rapidly aging here, and they're not quite the force that they had been. But they did manage to upset the 68-win Celtics in the Eastern Finals to make it to the championship round. And then Reed himself, he had played most of the 1973 season, but as we talked about earlier in the show, at this point he was kind of just like, hey, I'm kind of here. I'm kind of just another guy on the team. You know, you don't really need me to be the man or whatever. And his averages go down to 11 points per game and 8.6 rebounds per game. As, you know, he's in the end of his career, and he's only going to play one more season basically after this. However, just like Bette Midler, he went and saved the best for last, because the Knicks' five-game NBA Finals win over the Lakers, Reed was like, fuck that, I'm going to beat these assholes one more time before I get out of here, especially in the last three games, all wins by the Knicks. He averages 20.3 points per game, 11 rebounds per game in games 3, 4, and 5, earns his second NBA Finals MVP, solidifies his team legacy, and gets another ring. So yeah, just vintage Reed there, being like, no, I'm gutting through this, and I'm going to beat these guys one more time, and he absolutely does it, and just, yeah, stamps his way into, like, you know, NBA immortality with the two Finals MVPs, two titles. I mean, I think even the 1970, just that season may have been enough, but the fact that he comes back a couple years later and does it here, also does it as Finals MVP, it just helps his legacy so, so much more.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, yeah, that second one. And you look at, like, again, the Knicks. I mean, you look at what the guys averaged there. I mean, Bradley is 18.6 points, 4.8 rebounds, 3.4 assists. Frazier, 16.6 points, 6.8 rebounds, 5.2 assists. Reed, 16.4 points, 9.2 rebounds. Monroe, 16 points, 3 rebounds, 4 assists. DeBuscher, 15 points, 11 rebounds.
That's incredible.
Like, everything is so, like, any of those five guys, you know, numbers wise, you could have made the argument for any of them being MVP. Obviously, I've watched the video, would want to, you know, dig in a little more and get the accounts of who you might have thought. But certainly, you look at those numbers, it's not like Reed robbed somebody else, obviously, on who he could have been MVP. I mean, he very much was credibly the best player on his team and in that series. And Chamberlain, he had a fairly good series, but only, you know, 12 points per game, 18.6 rebounds per game. You know, that was the end of his NBA career too. So he, doing his job on the defensive end as well, to do so. So yeah, that's certainly a great end to his NBA career. Good caps. So he's only 30 at this point. So he only played till age 31, you know, which, is just, it's hard to beat. And yeah, you try to compare him, you know, numbers wise by modern players. He kind of, because he didn't have that longevity, you know, it loses a little something in the translation. But yeah, he was a force. He was, we haven't had a chance to talk too much about it, but in terms of just like the respect that he had and the way that he kind of kept that culture together and, was sort of the heart and soul of that team. Really was just a special player and a special guy. Definitely going to be missed.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just a legend in the NBA. It's just an all-time great. Playing, obviously, you know, playing in a major media market made. And like you said, became the star of the Knicks and a team that's had dozens of books about them, documentaries, right, all that sort of stuff. A very justifiably glorified team, but a team that, like, yeah, you know, just gets a lot of publicity because of playing in New York or whatever. But it's also, like we talked about, a lot of other things. Willis Reed being Willis Reed, you know, helped out a lot, and the team being as deep as they were, and being, you know, everybody getting in and all helping to try to, you know, turn things, or, you know, everybody, you know, sacrificing their numbers or sacrificing whatever to come together to win, you know, two titles or whatever. It's, you know, it's the stuff of legends that kind of works out. So again, it's a team that's like, and Reed's career and some of the stuff, you know, both sometimes overrated, but then also underrated, and probably just, you know, maybe just properly rated. You know what I mean? Willis Reed and the Knicks, maybe just properly rated, because just really, really cool stuff. And it's a shame that he passes away. And it's starting to happen a lot more, man. When we started this show, I remember it was like, you know, I think we were up to Wilt and you know, in terms of NBA MVPs who had passed away, and a lot more have you know, since in the last, you know, 9 years or whatever, right, have passed away, and it's unfortunately going to be a lot more coming in the next few years.
Sure, yeah, going back to the Knicks, I mean, I think that, yeah, I mean, they really are, you know, they did help make the NBA matter in New York and helped solidify. I mean, I think the Knicks still have a legacy, you know, are still kind of seen as a glamour team. I mean, obviously part of it is just the inherent fact that they're in New York, but I think those Knicks set a standard that really no one has ever been able to approach in New York. I mean, even those 90s Knicks teams, you know, and they certainly live on a lot of people's memories, and they're certainly an aura around them in a different way, but yeah, no one has ever been able to exceed that standard, but they set that standard at a really important time for the league, and got the league overall on a different plane, thanks to the way they played, the fact that they were New York and got some attention, making, you know, at least for a brief period of time, making themselves and making the NBA kind of seem cool. And of course that paid dividends, you know, down the road. I mean, you know, you can think of a lot of the way that Showtime later promoted, you know, the Lakers were promoted as Showtime, and how, you know, they took a lot of what, you know, was sort of there with the Knicks and sort of applied them to the Lakers a little bit in terms of, you know, those teams. A lot of parallels, yeah, between those. Obviously not as long lived and in a different time, so it doesn't quite have the same. And yeah, you kind of talk about the books that have been written about the Knicks, and I've enjoyed a lot of them. When the Garden Was Eaten is
incredible. Yeah,
and
they're great.
Some really, really good ones. Yeah, I mean, sometimes I'm kind of like, oh, I wish, you know, we'd write books about other teams. And right, some good ones have come out, but you know, unfortunately, like the 70s Washington Bullets, you know, just don't engender that same type.
No, probably not selling as many books. Yeah, harder to go to into a room and a meeting and say, I'm going to write about the Washington Bullets. Right. What do you think? And they're going to say, yeah, no, we're good.
Yeah, even though, you know, they were, you know, they had some success and, you know, were important to the city of D.C., at least for a short period of time. But yeah, it doesn't have the same staying power. But yeah, I mean, these Knicks were special, no question about it. And sometimes, you know, you kind of like, you know, grown a little bit of like, oh yeah, another Knicks team getting, getting that. But at the same time, yeah, they were special. They were great. Reed was an incredible player, and yeah, it just sad to see. Yeah, as we're doing the show, as we're getting older, as the NBA legends are getting older, you know, we'll see more guys leave us. But you know, we always do our best to try to help them be remembered and give some context as to why they were great.
Yeah,
it's a fun thing for us to be able to do, to go back into it. It's sad, of course, but it's also a good opportunity for us to get a little bit deeper into the career of, you know, one of the greats.
Right. It's always one of those things that it's like, it sucks that it takes, you know, Willis Reed passing away for us to do a Willis Reed episode, but it's also like, you know, the good thing is that we can, you know, do this thing, and we can then dig into these people, maybe appreciate them a little bit more. It's always, you know, yeah, you want to appreciate them a little bit better if you can, you know, while they're, you know, still alive. But yeah, it's just, you know, it's just unfortunately kind of the way it goes, is sometimes we'll forget about guys or not focus on people, and then when they pass away, but sure, the fact that we just don't go, oh, okay, and shrug and move on with our lives, the fact that then, you know, us and other people then start really digging in and going, okay, let me learn about this guy and study the history and the background, that makes it really, really cool. So yeah.
All right. Well, thanks everyone for checking us out. Of course, you can find us at overandbacknba.com. All of our past episodes, we've got some great stuff. If you want to go more in depth on the 70s Knicks or other topics from the 70s, we did a great series of podcasts on the 70s. If you're new to us, there's a whole archive of 8 or 9 years of shows now that we've done, more than 300 of great discussion of NBA history, all kinds of topics. If you're into that, I think you've found a good home. But thanks to everyone who is supporting us. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Over and Back NBA. if you want to let us know what you think of this episode or anything else, or just want to give us ideas or just want to say nice things to us, we're or if you want to say mean things to us, I would prefer you not do that.
Yeah, but that's just cruel. But
yeah. I mean, we're not, you can at least get one thing in before we block.
Right.
So, all right. Well, until next time, thanks everyone for listening. We'll be back again soon.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.